I've never heard a person walk out of the stadium and say, wow, I wish that game would have included more waiting.
He is an endless source of baseball and hockey knowledge.
José Berríos, el lanzador de Puerto Rico en el Clásico Mundial de Béisbol.
Sean Morosi, every week with Wyman and Bob.
You're being serious with me right now?
He's here, everybody. We look forward to this each and every week, and I would imagine the guy who's always in a fantastic mood is in a super fantastic mood today because baseball season is here. It's underway, and he's with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline every week, John Morosi. How are you, my friend?
Happy opening week of the Major League Baseball season to both of you and all of our great listeners today. Yes, I was at Dodger Stadium yesterday. I can report to you with a good degree of confidence, they've got a good lineup there in L.A.
Yeah, we were all wondering.
Good. I saw Betts, Ohtani, Freeman come to the plate their first two trips around. They came to the plate six times combined. They reached base six times. The only time they made an out was when Ohtani ran into an out on the bases. They won 7-1. That is going to be a difficult year for everybody else in the National League West.
What kind of hat is that? What is that called that you were wearing?
Oh, my goodness gracious. Now, I should have known that was going to be my first question. First of all, the type of hat it is the type of hat that Dave Sims thinks is cool. And so if it's good for Dave Sims, darn it, it's good for me. in all seriousness, a little peek behind the curtain here. From when we last spoke when I was in Seoul, I flew right to L.A. For the season opening game, but we were able to squeeze in a few days of family time there. So my wife and our three kids flew out from Michigan, met me in L.A., and I said, you know, the Morosi hairline is not exactly what it used to be. So if you don't have a quality sun hat, you're going to be feeling it by opening day. So I invested, I think it was about $15, at a quality Target in Redondo Beach, California. I said, I just need a good, solid hat to cover the dome. And lo and behold, I wore it on the air yesterday because it was pretty warm and pretty sunny. And Dave Sims thought it was cool. I got a couple other kind remarks. I said hello to Bryan Cranston on the field yesterday. That was pretty cool for me.
Oh, nice.
So it was a great day all the way around. I saw Sandy Koufax, and I got to be honest. I think I'd seen Sandy in a Dodger postseason celebration at one point in time or another, but I leaned over. I said, Sandy, great to see you. Happy opening day. I had to do it, right? And that was pretty special moment right there.
Yeah, I would have been a fanboy with Walter White out there asking him all kinds.
So Brian, I'll tell you this: Bryan Cranston is a massive baseball fan, and we didn't talk for very long. But when I said hello to Brian, he said, "Hey, love the network, enjoy watching the show." That was pretty cool. So he does obviously a lot of promotional work for MLB about the new excitement around the game. So he's been a part of MLB's marketing campaigns, and I'm just telling you, he is a legit fan. If anybody that would have a conversation with me for a while about baseball has got to be a serious fan, because I mean it's not as though he's just in passing. So that was pretty neat. He is a genuine baseball fan, and that certainly made my opening day. That was a pretty fun conversation.
Well, you brought up you were watching the Dodgers and Ohtani, and we were just talking about him on and off the air, this whole gambling thing that's gone on with his interpreter. There are those out there that have already assumed that he is guilty, and there's a cover-up. There are others saying wait and see, others that don't want to. It's weird. There's an element of the fan base that just, in their mind, they want him to be guilty. Like, what are you talking about? He's clearly guilty. I don't know how you parse through all of what's taken place to this point, John, but what is your feeling about what's happened? Do you feel like he's being less than 100% forthright in what he knew or what he knows? Do you think his interpreter was covering for him? Where are you at with all of this?
It's a complicated one, and the short answer is we don't know. And it's probably going to be a while before we know a little bit more. But the big picture thing here is, because you've got a federal inquiry into the allegation of the illegal bookmaker, and because all of these various electronic records and communication, it's all in various ways connected to that federal probe, eventually this will come out and it will see the light of day, whatever it is. And so honestly, as I as I watch it unfold, and certainly you've got a federal investigation there, you've got MLB doing an investigation into it, there have been statements, and this is a very important thing, statements made by Ohtani's attorneys to ESPN saying that they have reported this massive theft, as they have described it, to the authorities, but they have not specified which authorities, and ESPN said in the last couple of days they have not been able to independently confirm which authorities were contacted. So that's a little opaque. And Ohtani obviously did not take questions at his press event this week. I understand when you've got legal sensitivities, you're probably not going to take questions. It all leaves, to your point, a tremendous void of information about what we know for sure, let's say. And so when there's a void of information in our modern news ecosystem, people tend to speculate. And I think Ohtani has, at least based on the look of his game yesterday and the way he's carried himself, he seems to have made a certain peace with this uncertainty lingering out there. Because in the near term, he's clearly not, based on the available information, going to be placed on administrative leave by MLB. Because there's no indication at this juncture that betting on baseball was involved. No one has actually alleged that in any of the reporting. And so I think that's a very important detail. Very important detail. Because as we know, that's the third rail of baseball. You don't bet on baseball, period. And there's no indication here that that's happened. So as long as that remains the case, he's going to keep playing. And to your point about how fans across the country or maybe around the world view him, the biggest unknown for me is how he responds in terms of his play and his demeanor and this jovial way in which he plays the game when he goes on the road and gets booed. Because we all talked about this last year. We lived it. He wasn't even getting booed in a divisional rival ballpark like Seattle necessarily, because Mariner fans wanted him to come play for the Mariners. And yeah, so there was this general belief by a lot of fan bases that, like, hey, let's be nice to him this year. Well, now that you sign with the Dodgers, a team that has a Miami Heat of LeBron, Wade, and Bosch era vibe about them in terms of the target on them, they're going to have a high degree of scrutiny, even apart from this controversy. And so now he goes and plays in San Diego, he'll probably get booed. Goes and plays in San Francisco, he'll probably get booed. Other parks, I'm curious about that too. But it's going to be a very different competitive situation than he really has ever encountered. I suspect he'll do fine with it. But that to me is the great unknown, is he's never been a villain before. And yeah, I think fairly or unfairly, he will get that treatment, at least on some level, by visiting fans for the very first time.
Yeah, that, I mean, he's quite the opposite of a villain. I just feel like he's just such a good guy. But
right. Exactly. But again, when you sign a high dollar deal, at the end of the day, there's always going to be a little bit of negativity that goes around.
Right.
And when you sign with a team that has the perception of being the big, rich ball club that's playing checkbook baseball, as Miles Michaelis called it the other day publicly. And the other thing, too, is, and you know this from living on the West Coast, I've made this statement. I actually said this on the air in L.A., and most of the people there that were around me when I said it sort of nodded their heads in agreement. The Angels are not really disliked in the way that the Dodgers are by their rivals. The Angels are not. The Angels go play in Oakland. They go play in Seattle. They go play the Rangers. Yeah, if you're going for a division title against them, there's a little negativity. That's natural. It's a divisional rivalry. But Padre fans do not like the Dodgers, and Giants fans hate the Dodgers. So the Giants dynamic that goes back to New York 100 years ago. I mean, there's a lot of history there. But the Padre Dodger thing, L.A., San Diego, big city, not quite as big city, that complex is real. And I've covered Dodger games in San Diego. Yeah, Dodger fans travel, but there's a lot more when you spend money like this and put the target on you in that way. There's going to be a lot more boos, and it's, I think it's going to be good natured. It's part of sports, but the Angels are not hated. The Dodgers have some serious rivals that are part of their history.
Hey, JP, I know you look at everything in Major League Baseball. Had a nice opposite field home run from Haniger. He looked really good. It looks like he is going to be hopefully healthy the entire year. But anything that stood out, good or bad, from the Mariners' loss 6-4 to Boston?
Maybe just the one surprise, the defense and the pitching weren't quite aligned in the way that you typically would see them. Obviously, a couple strange plays that kind of doomed the Mariners yesterday. Castillo wasn't necessarily at his most overpowering. He can shut down good teams, and he will. I think that was just a game where the pitching and defense didn't line up, and there wasn't enough offense to paper over it. But I agree. Mitch Haniger's resurgence is a huge story for the Mariners. I think we forget, maybe we don't forget, but I think we have to remember how much pain this guy has played through for a long time. And by all accounts, he is about as healthy now as he's been in a while. And so as long as that's the case, and we see swings like the one he had yesterday, that's really good. And Dylan Moore comes off the bench. And that's where, too, we've talked about this a bit, where this team is not going to always have the same nine guys every day. And they're going to have moments of the game like the Canzone to Moore flip where Scott Servais flips the lineup from a lefty one to a righty one, whatever the circumstance might be. And so I think it's going to be a very active bench. That's kind of the new way that teams are run. There are certain guys that are just not going to get pinch hit for. You're never going to pinch hit for Raleigh. Obviously, you're not going to pinch hit for Julio. Probably not J.P. Crawford. So there's guys that are going to be in there no matter what. But I think we've seen the adaptability so far. And I think that this team offensively is going to be good enough to win a lot of games. But yesterday was a big reminder that for this team to get to the postseason, to get to the World Series, when the Mariners score four runs, that's a game they need to win. And they're going to have to win it 4-3 or 4-2, basically. That's how they win their games. And it's going to be some different names in the rotation, obviously with Wu being out to begin the year. And then the bullpen, and there's even more turnover certainly than the rotation in the bullpen this year. And I think it's going to take a while to find their footing. But make no mistake, this team is not going to outslug teams like I saw the Dodgers yesterday. They're just not built that way. They're going to have to win games when they score four runs, and yesterday they didn't.
How much do teams, I don't know how much you talked about Seattle specifically, but we talked about the importance of this team, John, getting off to a good start. And part of that means finding a way to manufacture runs when the ball doesn't carry the way they say it doesn't during the early months. The marine layer. We always hear about the marine layer and how tough it is for hitters. Now, there were three balls that left the yard last night, some made it to the warning track, and maybe on a warm July day it goes out. I'm not sure. But I'm curious, just, you know, is it stubbornness you've seen over the years in hitters in the way they approach baseball in Seattle in the early months? Is it something that should be emphasized by Scott that, hey, we're going to be more of a station-to-station, you know, put the game in motion, manufacture runs at least for the early months until the ball does start to carry better?
Yeah, it's a great question because, to me, Bob, the way that players are paid now, it's for the big production numbers. And and they really prepare their entire off season. They prepare their mentality, their habits to swing big and to do damage because they know that that's what gets paid. So it's a really interesting point. I agree with you. I think team baseball, especially in Seattle's ballpark, which I think is not quite as extreme of a pitcher's park as it once was. If you go back 20 years ago, maybe, you know, changing climate is part of it. Other elements, the ball being different over time. So I do think that early on last season, we've talked about this before, they were four games under 500 through the end of April. And at the end of the day, that basically cost them a division. It did, or cost them a postseason berth. You certainly could say. So I agree with you fundamentally and philosophically, but if we were going to see a big time change in the way that that offenses adapt, we probably would have seen it by now. That being said, I think having Mitch Haniger here is a help. I think Polanco puts the ball in play more often. Garver, there's a reason why they got him. I think those they have adjusted. It's interesting. They have adjusted the personnel as opposed to asking for last year's personnel to make the adjustments. They've adjusted the personnel. They've not asked last year's personnel to make the adjustments. And I think that's telling in the way that the game is set up. You have a select group of hitters. Yandy Diaz in Tampa, we talked about him a bunch in the offseason. He is an exceptional guy. He can walk more than he strikes out. Very few guys do that now. And if you've got those kind of guys, they're incredibly valuable, not just for what they do, but also the example they set. There's a reason why Justin Turner was so valuable to the Blue Jays, why I like that move so much. I think a lot of that, you know, Mitch Haniger's leadership yesterday, the swing he took on that ball, I think and I hope will be a really good example for the rest of the Mariner lineup.
JP, we know that that you saw Brian Cranston. What we saw here was a flaming trident. We saw Nelson Cruz throw out the first pitch. What was the best thing that you saw around the league, Major League Baseball, on opening day?
You know, that's a great question. I think that I always love the ceremonies. The ceremonies are pretty cool. I mean, the one in L.A. was unique because actually we got to see Adrian Beltre throw out the first pitch. And that was I know obviously he'll probably have his day in, you know, Seattle at some point in time this year. I did love Nelson Cruz coming back, signing the one-day contract, retiring as a Mariner. That was pretty cool. And having Felix there with him as well. I do think I didn't grow up in L.A., but I will say this, the combination of weather and the setting, time of year, the way Dodger Stadium looks, it that has been my favorite place to see an opening day in my career. And I've been lucky. I was at Yankee Stadium the last 2 years. That's special. But the weather and being outside and everything else, it's tough to top Dodger Stadium. And I think, too, I'll tell you this, one of my favorite parts of yesterday, after the game, Mookie Betts, I was talking to Mookie about his game and his day, and he said something I hope that everybody who's, if you're driving home from school in Seattle listening to us right now, Mookie is playing shortstop now. So you got someone who's going to be a Hall of Fame player, principally as an outfielder, now playing shortstop. And I asked him about the preparation that he's doing right now to get ready for the position. And he told me this. He said he's taking now 200 to 300 ground balls a day to get ready to have two or three chances during the game. And he loves making mistakes in his practice every day. And so I actually had a prominent college coach this morning, once that interview was out there, call me up and said, John, you got to tell me more about that. Because I'm going to talk to my team about this, about what Mookie Betts told you about making mistakes. And I just think that no matter what it is that you do in sports or life or anything else, if you're already great at what you do in the way that Mookie is, and then you humble yourself enough to say, you know what? I got more to learn. I'm gonna do my job and challenge myself to the point of making mistakes, put those mistakes and lessons in my back pocket, and then go out there in front of a million people watching the game tonight and then try to do it for real in front of them. I just thought it was beautiful. It was just a beautiful statement about work ethic, life, perspective. It's why Mookie Betts, I've said it before, he's one of my favorite people in the game because of the way he represents the sport. And what it means to love your craft and be a great teammate. So my lesson after yesterday was Mookie Betts, great teammate. He moved positions twice because it made his team better. And I hope that we can all be a little like Mookie this season. That's my hope and wish. How about that?
Be like Mookie.
Yeah.
I love that. Like Mookie. He's my
favorite player outside of the Seattle, anybody wearing a Mariners uniform.
I love it.
Mookie.
That's a great choice. And honestly, you know, just between friends here, he's mine too. So there you go.
Hey, well, John, quickly before we hit the break here, I got to ask you, one of my favorite stories about opening day, I didn't see it, but I read about it, was the protest in Oakland where the fans elected not to go into the stadium and instead hang out in the parking lot to show their displeasure with the ownership group. I respect their commitment. I feel bad for the hardcore fans out there. Does it lead to any change, or does this still ultimately end up in Vegas?
I think it's still the latter. There have still been, even though obviously the process has not been maybe as smooth as everybody hoped it would be, it still, to me, is pointing toward Las Vegas very resolutely. Now it's just a matter of where they're going to play in the interim. And I would expect we're going to hear in the next 3 to 4 months, maybe even before the All-Star break, where they're going to play next season, because this is the last year of the lease. And I think, to your point, if there was going to be an indication that the fans of Oakland were in the headspace to say we are willing to have a long goodbye to the A's and have them stay at the Coliseum for a few more years as an interim solution, it really seems like, to your point, they have reached a point of disgust with the situation and are just not going to support this year, at least not at the outset. And they've made their decision, and it is a sad situation in this respect. But I think that things are moving on, and according to reports, whether it's Sacramento, whether it's Salt Lake City, there'll be a new city on an interim basis getting a Major League Baseball team for probably 2 to 3 seasons. Based on the way things are going. So the Sacramento Kings may have company. The Utah Jazz may have some company here pretty soon. But it's sad, because I've covered playoff games in that building, in that ballpark, and it can get rocking at the right times, and it's just sad to see what has unfolded.
John, as always, we appreciate the conversation. Great stuff. Enjoy your weekend, and we look forward to the conversation next week.
Sounds great, guys. I love it. It's a great time of year. We'll maybe mix in a little bit of crack and talk. I know that the playoff picture maybe isn't quite what it was a year ago this time, but still a fabulous time of year for sports in Seattle.
Thanks, JP.
All the best, guys. Thank you.
There you go. John Morosi with us each and every week. Always love that conversation with John. He's just always so positive. So really enjoying his time out at Dodger Stadium yesterday. All right, coming up, a few things stood out when we talked to John Schneider earlier. We're going to dive into some of the things he had to say. That is coming up as we continue live from Edgar's Cantina at T-Mobile Park. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
We continue live from Edgar's Cantina here at T-Mobile Park on a beautiful sunny day as the Mariners getting set for game two of their four-game series with the Boston Red Sox. They're all out there on the field warming up as we speak. We'll be catching up with Bryce Miller in the 5 o'clock hour. We still have mean texts, by the way, so get those going. 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. How are they doing with those, Lefko?
Eh, all right. Not great.
Not great?
They can use some work. Yeah,
are they dumb?
Yeah, they're dumb. There aren't a lot of them, you know.
Oh, there's plenty of
there. The sun goes
there's
away.
Plenty of dumbasses on the text board. Are you kidding me?
No shortage of dumbasses. All right. We'll check in, all of you guys. 866-979.
It's Dave's birthday. He's old.
Yeah.
If you need material.
Dave's birthday, he's old.
Zing, Lefko.
If they need material that isn't focused on me.
So. Wow. All right.
That was good.
To the point. 866-979-3776. Powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. One note surrounding the Mariners. Ryan Divish tweeting out 3 minutes ago. Mitch Garver scratched from the lineup. No reason given yet. Mitch Haniger will DH tonight. Dom Canzone in left field. Luke Raley will be in right field. So not sure what's going on with Garver. He's one of the guys that came with an injury history, but I don't know how you get injured after one game. I didn't see anything that seemed outrageous or worrisome, but we'll find out. So no reason given yet, but again, Mitch Garver scratched from the lineup. Mitch Haniger will then DH, and Dom Canzone in left, Luke Raley in right field. So take that as you will. We spoke with John Schneider earlier today, and usually it's on Thursdays, but again, we moved it to today because of opening day yesterday. But I'm still having a hard time. I should just go to YouTube and look up this kickoff, the XFL style, what they were doing. Because it just is, in reading the description, it sounds really hokey to me.
Yes.
My only silver lining to it for me, Dave, is that at least they're trying to keep it in the game, because I felt like it was just a steady, slow march to eliminating the kickoff altogether, and we would be placing the ball at the 25 to start the game, and that would be how it goes.
And then what do you call it? They placed the ball at 105.
Yeah, so 105 placement.
Yeah.
instead of 105 kickoff.
Well, and it's exactly the way I described it. I think it's Mickey Mouse. I think the one thing you were asking a question, which I was a good question, but I think the front line on the receiving team, I don't think that they're going to look back at the person catching. I think they're just going to react to when the guys run.
So could they fake them, though?
Yeah, I probably could. I don't know if that there's any kind of, like, procedure or if you do flinch. I mean, I don't think you need to stand perfectly still.
Maybe one guy on their team will be designated to look back, and he'll give a signal.
Yeah, maybe.
Go or whatever. There'll be some kind of signal to say, all right.
Well, it's the way I described it was Mickey Mouse. You just described it as, what did
Hokey.
You say? Hokey. Thank you. That's another good word that my dad uses all the time. I am becoming my dad, so it's Hokey and it's Mickey Mouse. Yeah, it just seems like somebody was saying, like, Red Rover.
Send Dave Wyman over?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of like that, or like when you're supposed to count when it's hide and go seek. It's just kind of strange. It doesn't flow the same way. But the one thing that, and this is where we'll see if that happens, but I didn't want them, number one, to take it away just because, like, what are you going to call the beginning of the game, but also because there were lots of guys that made the team because of that kickoff coverage and kickoff return as well. And it sounds like that they're trying to get, you know, more action out of that play. You know, it's like, I feel like the kickers have gotten good enough where they can just kick it out every single time, you know, and then there was lots of fair catches in there. And I feel like this may get, maybe there'll be some strategy of guys, you know, running little reverses and setting up blocking things and stuff like that. So that's the saving grace, but I do think it's going to look kind of weird. And especially since, like, they're like, well, if you want to see what it looks like, go watch the XFL. That's, you know, that right there just is kind of discouraging.
Yeah.
I don't want to see anything that comes from the XFL.
Yeah, the only thing I wanted to see come from the XFL was the sky, what do they call it, the sky judge or the sky ref, whatever the hell that was.
Oh, yeah.
And then you could hear the communication.
The back and forth.
Yeah.
Right.
I wouldn't mind that, but... Yeah, outside of that, I didn't watch enough XFL, to be honest, to cling to any element of the game going, man, if the NFL did this, that would be great.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm, again, happy they're trying, to, at least in this incarnation, to keep the kickoff as part of the game, which, as you point out, in turn leads to employment for certain players that otherwise wouldn't make the team.
Yeah.
I'm still bothered by the hip drop. Okay. That's what I'm most curious to see. All right, how are guys tackling this year? How different is it going to look? Will it be obvious, or is there going to be a noticeable difference in the way defenders tackle a ball carrier that they're trailing? I'm not worried about when they're in front of them, and that's going to look the same. But when you're chasing down a guy, or you're coming from the side, because that's where we've seen some of their examples of you don't do this. All right, well, what's that going to look like now? If a guy's pursuing somebody, he's coming from the side, and he's got to get him, or the guy's going to get by him.
Well, here's what I look forward to, I honestly think this is going to happen. I look forward to the admission from people who were for it that are going to admit that, okay, this was a stupid idea. That's what I look forward to the most.
Are you going to walk out onto the field with middle fingers in the air?
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, I'd have lots of company.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a lot of the defenders for, in the NFL, just in general. And look, and I don't think anything ill for people that are embracing it and, you know, that they love it. And that's fine. But I still think that is going to be ridiculous to enforce. You know, what exactly is that going to look like? But, you know, and that the other thing is our conversations with Schneider, you know, it seems like they're getting a little bit more locked down, you know, where it's like,
oh, their info
pretty. Yeah, you get, and we've talked about how good they are, and Dave Pearson, which we joke about, Dave Pearson, who's the, you know, director of media, vice president, all that, you know, he sits there, but he does a great job of just keeping everything inside the building, and then, you know, still letting John come out and, you know, have a conversation with us every week, which is very cool. But lots of times where I'm like, is he going to answer this question? How's he going to answer this one? You know, what do you think about Michael Penix? You know, he kept it pretty general in that from that standpoint. But by the way, real quick, just specifically on Penix, you've got Ryan Grubb there. Yeah. And he knows pretty much everything about him. So that would be a guy that, you know, you would listen to. And I don't feel like they even need to go much further. I mean, just spent a couple of seasons with him, and, you know, how far they took it last year. I mean, I think you pretty much know everything about Michael Penix if you're Ryan Grubb, their offensive coordinator.
By the way, do you think Pearson gives a little pregame pep talk to Schneider before the interview? Is like, all right, if they ask you this, yeah, here's how you answer that. Or if they ask you this, here's how you answer
that. I don't think so. I think John can figure that stuff out on his own. But yeah, I mean, and he knows. John's been at it for a really long time. And yeah, I think the fact that John is funny and sometimes will go off into like a Tommy Boy thing or something like that, and then all of a sudden people get a little nervous about, okay, what's he going to say next?
Where's he going? He's in the trust tree.
Well, and also we've been on the road, and there's a few times where John and I will interact, and then Dave Pearson sees that, and he doesn't want it to become that.
He knows what it can become.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
He knows what's in store if he doesn't jump in. I gotcha. Yeah. All right, coming up, a couple of UW players left big impressions yesterday. We're going to hear about that when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Wyman and Bob live from Edgar's Cantina. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial. Every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
Well, it turns out this one is kind of UW themed. So Steve Belichick did his first press conference with the local media, and he was asked about differences between him and his dad.
I got a job and he doesn't. he knows that. But yeah, I mean, I look up to my dad. He's a mentor to me, but I'm myself.
Well, he sounds a lot like his dad, except with a sense of humor.
Yeah.
Because he said, I have a job and he doesn't.
He's got the same energy level as his dad.
He should have followed that up with, in your face, dad.
Take that, dad. Does he still have the mullet going? And remember, he was doing that thing with the tongue?
Yeah, he has a weird tongue thing.
He was doing on the sidelines when he was.
Who was the coach that had the weird eyeball thing?
Weird eyeball.
Oh, Adam Gase.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, where it was just yeah, it was very strange.
He always looked like he was walking into his own surprise party.
Yeah. Steve Belichick totally sounds like his dad.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. So hopefully he's that good of a coach. But, yeah, at least he has a sense of humor. I mean, you look at him, you know, the Belichicks. Bill, I really admire. I've said this a million times. But I can't stand that he is that immature about it. Handling that. That's just part of your job. Every coach signs up for it. So, and I'm not asking him to be, you know, something he's not, or personality plus or anything. I always thought he could do a better job with that. So hopefully his son does better than he does.
Sweeping the dial.
We heard from Field Yates already today about Michael Penix, but he came away from Pro Day yesterday maybe even more impressed with another guy.
I gotta tell you, I did not think that a player could move further up my draft board by doing nothing at a Pro Day, but Rome Odunze may have accomplished that, Molly. And I think that, as we often talk about with these draft prospects, you're not investing in just the player, you're also investing in the person. And nobody had any questions about Rome Odunze's character, football character and personal character, coming into the Washington Pro Day, but it was only sort of fortified today when you see the way that he is interacting with all of his teammates. As I mentioned earlier, when I was sitting there with a bunch of scouts watching the 40 times, Rome Odunze was right there with his own phone trying to get 40 times from Mike and his teammates as well. And it just sort of spoke to the kind of person that anybody around this program would tell you that you have in Rome Odunze.
It's funny because I saw the thing here saying he was more impressed with him. I'm going, thinking before that clip, I'm like, he didn't do anything. He didn't work out yesterday. How are you more impressed? But he explained there that he was there supporting all of his teammates. I think Odunze is going to be a star. I think he's going to be an absolute stud at the NFL level.
I think so, too. And you're seeing more and more people start to say what he said. Do you think he's possibility he gets drafted ahead of Harrison? I mean, he's pretty much been solid at number four or five.
He crushed it at the combine and showed a crazy work ethic, whereas Harrison didn't even want to do a pro day workout. I don't know. That would mean something to me. Now, if there's a clear distinction in talent amongst the experts, I guess that obviously is going to win out. But if you had him sort of even on your board, I'd go with the Dunze.
Yeah, I've said that many times, and I don't care how good you are. I just feel like if you show the NFL, I am going to be all in for everything. I'm going to be excited about it. You're going to get the best out of me. It's like he's going to be consistently good. Like you're going to say during the season, look, he was like that with this thing. He was like that with that thing. I mean, everything he does. And Dunze, you hear more and more about that people are like, wow. And it's almost like they're discovering it. Like, wow, this guy's really good. It's like, yeah, we've all kind of known that around here for a while.
Sweeping the dial.
Well, Colin Cowherd was doing his own mock draft, and he comes up with a wild trade proposal for the Seahawks.
And at number 12, the Broncos trade down. They need more players. The Seahawks move up and take Michael Penix, the quarterback from Washington. He can stay in the same town. The Seahawks offensive coordinator was Michael Penix, offensive coordinator in college. Seattle doesn't owe Geno Smith any money next year. I think he throws the prettiest ball in the draft, including Caleb Williams. I think he throws a beautiful football. He gets his coordinator. You can say it's a bit of a reach, but Seattle's got their pieces. They've got corners. They've got two backs, multiple receivers, a left tackle, linebackers. Seattle's got a lot of pieces here. I think they have the ability to give up some draft capital to take a guy who throws an absolutely beautiful ball, Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, tight ends. Seattle's ready to win.
They've got two backs. They've got two receivers. They've got linebackers. I think most people are occupying those positions on other rosters. But I get what he's saying. The idea that Denver is going to want to do any sort of business with Seattle after how that Russell Wilson thing worked out doesn't seem realistic. But I don't know. Would they have to move up to get Penix?
Yeah, that's a good question. Maybe those guys all go on a big run and Harrison gets kicked out of the top five. And, you know, you're just going to see quarterbacks taken. I think the interesting thing is that would be a John Schneider kind of move, right? Because you already went and traded for Sam Howell, and you gave up draft capital for that. And then, you know, you got Geno, who you have a lot of trust in. We're going to go ahead and take another quarterback.
How do you think the 12s would respond to that?
Well, I think around here, everybody would be really excited if they drafted Penix, no matter what.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you're not a big fan, you're like, oh, yeah, UW guy goes to the, you know, like, I'm trying to think of any other, you know, Brock Heward, obviously. Who else? Michael Jackson went from UW to the Seahawks.
Disley.
Yeah, Will Disley, Uncle Will, that was a big deal. So, especially the quarterback that took him to the national championship game. It's like a fairy tale type of story for Seattle sports fans.
It would be, if they made that move, it would certainly play into their best available versus biggest need, because quarterback is not their biggest need as we sit right now. It may be next year or the year after, who knows, but you need O-linemen much more than you need a quarterback right now, because you've got just some empty spots. I mean, who's going to take Damian Lewis's spot as we sit right now? They don't have that obvious guy.
Well, then what would they do? I mean, but you're right. They'll take it as far as they need to take it for best player available.
Yeah.
And if Penix, they believe that he is that guy, they're going to take him. So, yeah, I think I've always thought that about Schneider, but the more that we've had conversations with him, the more confident I am that that's the way that he's going to go. And I think it would be really interesting and, you know, to see what are they going to do with either Geno or Sam Howell at that point. And then, you know, are you expecting him to start right away? I'm thinking if you move up, pretty much you're going to do that.
The other part is it's probably highly unlikely because Colin Cowherd is almost never right about anything. So I'm gonna say the fact that he put that out there into the ether means it's the most likely, least likely thing to happen.
He sure says it with a lot of conviction, though, doesn't he?
Of course he does. That's the key to the whole thing. Yeah, just say it with emphasis. All right, coming up, Bryce Miller will join us live on set here at Edgar's Cantina. Also need more of your mean texts. 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company.
You're not going to get it from them, Bob. They're too lazy. Half of our listeners right now are just stoned to the bejesus bells. Right now, they're laying on a couch, watching reruns of Logan's Heroes.
Smoking that Kentucky bluegrass.
Trying to figure it out. Like, what did he mean by that?
A little northern Cincinnati, something like that. Your mean text coming up as well as Bryce Miller. So stay tuned for all of it. It's Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710.